So this is the title of my podcast, for lack of a better word, Justice Unraveled. My name is Luis Armando Arias. I'm an assistant professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice and Security Studies. I graduated from UTEP in 1977 with a degree in political science. I'm retired from the FBI as a supervisory intelligence analyst. The way I use my moral dilemmas is it extracts from the student their logic, how they think, having been socialized through family, friends, school, and so what's their value system to help them decipher this moral dilemma. Generally speaking, what moral dilemmas do is that we are confronted every day on having to choose right from wrong. The name of this moral dilemma is the Mad Bomber. A madman who has threatened to explode several bombs in crowded areas has been apprehended. Unfortunately, he has already planted the bombs, and they are scheduled to go off in a short time. It is possible that hundreds of people may die. The authorities cannot make him divulge the location of the bombs by conventional methods. He refuses to say anything and requests a lawyer to invoke his right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment and protect his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. In exasperation, some high-level officials suggest torture. This would be illegal, of course, but the official thinks that it is nevertheless the right thing to do in this desperate situation. Do you agree? If you do, would it also be morally justifiable to torture the Mad Bomber's innocent wife if that is the only way to make him talk? Why?
There's more reasons to not use torture, or how it cannot be justifiable, rather than reasons why it can be excused in this scenario. But I do think it was controversial.
We have a right way of doing things. We have what's called the due process of law, and it allows everyone to have a fair and equal trial.
I was asking myself the questions of, should law always be followed, even when it leads to seemingly immoral results? When should moral considerations override legal ones? And who decides when an exception should be made? All of these key questions were very hard to resolve.
So thank you very much for coming and allowing me to have this discussion with you. I think it's important to set out a definition of torture. So I'm going to share with you a definition that you can use in terms of, you know, analyzing and dissecting this concept of torture and then later applying it to this Mad Bomber or ticking bomb scenario. So a definition of torture, according to the United Nations Convention Against Torture, is defined this way. It is any act by which severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental, is intentionally inflicted on a person for such purposes as obtaining from him or a third party information or a confession. And so I wanted to go ahead and just begin our conversation. Let me ask you, are there any legal and moral implications in that moral dilemma?
So right away, I thought of over 8th Amendment, which protects individuals against cruel or unusual punishment. This includes the torture that this person goes through. The due process, which is the fundamental principle of fairness in legal proceedings. So the right way to get a confession, the right way to lead a trial, the right way to get all this information. Of course, confessions are not admissible in trial in the court of law. So definitely think about how, even if you do get a confession, how helpful is this going to be, or how effective is it going to be to trial this person?
So there's a wealth of criminal law concepts that you've shared with us. And so I want to take a little bit at a time by maybe dissecting a little bit of what you just mentioned and looking at certain amendments. He obviously, and I'm just saying he, this terrorist or suspected terrorist, has invoked through his attorney the Fifth Amendment self-incrimination. I wondered if you could share with us what that's about. What does that mean for our audience, this Fifth Amendment self-incrimination, and how that works?
Basically, what it covers is that you kind of have the right to stop speaking, to not admit to anything, and basically you have the right to have your lawyer present if you do choose to speak at any time.
And so in this case, he is being interrogated by presumably law enforcement officers, and being forced to tell or confess or talk to the law enforcement officers where the bombs are planted, he is saying, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment self-incrimination. Correct. Is he right to do that?
Yes, he has the right to do so.
Even though he is a suspected terrorist, do they also have rights like that?
Yes, especially the criminal suspected. That's when it comes into place.
The other amendment that he talks about is his right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment. And I wondered if you could share that amendment and that part of the amendment, because there's other parts in the Sixth Amendment, but his right to counsel. Why would he ask for that?
When invoking your right to counsel, you get to have your attorney present. Usually, I believe it's very helpful. Sometimes they even speak for you. You don't even have to say anything because they have more knowledge of the law. And it won't stop you. It'll stop you from confessing to something or admitting to something that can later be used against you.
Is it proper to ask for right to counsel, or is the idea of the right to counsel correct in this place where, again, police are interrogating a suspected terrorist? Can he invoke his right to counsel during an interrogation?
During interrogation is when you are allowed to have a counsel present, yes, because you had already been present with those charges that you're being faced against.
And so there are other times when a person has a right to counsel during interrogation, as we mentioned here, during a lineup, during sentencing of the defendant, and so on. So I share that so that the audience also knows that there's other times, what they call the critical stages of the criminal process, when a person has the right to an attorney. So we mentioned the idea, and so I just want to touch back on this point. Do suspected terrorists or criminals maintain these rights?
Yes.
And why?
These rights come into place because we have a right way of doing things. We have what's called like the due process of law, okay. And it allows everyone to have a fair and equal trial. So we're innocent until proven guilty. And this is a process that allows them to come to that conclusion in a fair and equal manner.
So you and I, and we're not suspected terrorists, we haven't committed crimes, we have the right of Fifth Amendment, self-incrimination, Sixth Amendment. And so we have those rights even though we haven't been criminally charged. However, in this case, this person has been criminally charged. Do you think that these rights are more apparent? They should be more readable to people who are criminally accused of crimes?
I think these are like basically the rights of the criminally accused. I don't necessarily have a time where I'm talking to someone where I need to invoke my Fifth because I'm not incriminating it. We're just having a normal conversation. But if I'm being interrogated, if there's something that I might say and be used against me, then that's when I, for example, would have the ability to use the Fifth.
I'm going to follow up with your statement. You mentioned the rights of the criminally accused, that the Fifth and the Sixth Amendment in this scenario, in this moral dilemma, are rights of the criminally accused. Are those the only two rights, or can you recall from your classes any other rights of the criminally accused?
As I mentioned earlier, I first thought of the Eighth Amendment as well, which protects against excessive bail, or in this case, cruel or unusual punishment. And it would fall, torture would definitely fall under that. And so excessive bail, being treated fairly while they're in custody or in interrogation.
Any other amendment that comes to mind that is part of the rights of the criminally accused?
I believe it goes to the 14th Amendment as well. But
14th Amendment brings those Bill of Rights applicable to the states.
To the states, yes.
And so the search and seizure amendment is usually found where?
Yes, the Fourth Amendment.
Very good.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
You're right.
Those digress from this scenario, but I just wanted to follow up and share with our audience a little bit of education information and sharing that the Fifth, the Sixth, the Eighth, like you mentioned, are the rights of the criminally accused, and also the Fourth.
The Fourth.
Okay. Getting to the crux of this scenario, can torture ever be justified, do you think?
I want to say it can't be. I think it's understandable. I think it's understandable to have that thought process where you might think it might be the best idea or helpful to a greater good. I, however, don't think that is justifiable because it's not right. We have a process and we try to do things right, and it's worked before, and I think it continues to work.
So even though the scenario, even though the moral dilemma tells us that torture is illegal, I wonder if there are any exceptions when maybe law enforcement in this kind of situation can torture someone, again, an exception or a justification to torture someone. Is your position that, nope, there is?
I don't think so, no. I don't think it's justifiable or reliable either.
Any other legal implications from this scenario in addition to his mentioning the Fifth Amendment, self-incrimination, mm-hmm. the Sixth Amendment, right to counsel, you mentioning and drawing from this scenario, the Eighth Amendment, that torture can be a form of cruel and unusual punishment. Is there any other concept, criminal law concept, that comes to mind in this scenario that you thought about or you maybe extracted from the scenario and said, oh, here's a criminal law concept?
Well, I thought of confessions when it comes to confessions and how when they are forced, they're basically inadmissible in court. So torture would count as, well, being forced to confess, even if you're not actually admitting to it because you did it, but because you just want the torture to stop. And that's when I thought about too, a confession being forced, not being reliable.
A concept in criminal law is this idea of confessions. Confessions that are otherwise, like you mentioned, forced upon a person, they torture a person, they force information out of the person or coerce a person. So when are confessions admissible? What are the factors, the considerations for a confession to be admissible?
Well, a person has to freely speak. They will have to want to speak.
So do so freely,
yes.
Do so voluntarily.
And without any duress in the moment.
Any other concept that you can think of? Because I will share one with you and see if you can maybe entertain that concept if you know.
Those were my first thoughts, yeah.
Okay. So we touched a little bit about the Fourth Amendment. And again, for our audience, it's in two parts. The Fourth Amendment is one of the reasonableness, is one of the clauses. And the other one has to do with the warrant requirements. The first part says of the Fourth Amendment that we as people have the right to be left alone in our person, our belongings, our homes, our hotel room, our office, our luggage, and so on. And that when government intervenes onto this reasonable expectation of privacy, our home, for example, that's called interference by government. That's now invading, intruding upon a reasonable expectation of privacy, which requires of law enforcement to have a warrant,
correct,
a search warrant. Is the word exclusionary rule applicable in this scenario? From maybe piggyback off of the word confession, the idea of Fourth Amendment, and then this concept embedded in the Fourth Amendment called exclusionary rule. Did you ponder that thought maybe in this scenario?
In a way, I guess exclusionary could apply because exclusionary states that evidence illegally obtained will not be admissible in court.
Okay.
So the fact that this is being a forced confession means that it won't be admissible in court.
So that, again, just to reiterate what you just said very correctly, exclusionary rule is evidence that is obtained illegally by government is excludable or inadmissible in a court of law. This is to deter police misconduct, is why they did that in part. The case that's relevant to that exclusionary rule is what? Do you remember what that case is that kind of just...
Yes, the Matt versus Ohio.
Very good, Matt versus Ohio. Within the exclusionary rule, there's another concept sort of embedded within it called the fruit of the poisonous tree. Do you recall what that is?
It was other evidence obtained from that illegal act, correct? So mm-hmm. following that act, that evidence that's obtained, it's excluded.
Fruit of the poisonous tree, just like you mentioned, is that other evidence, in other words, the derivatives or the results of the illegal confession that was coerced or forced. So if we can maybe agree and if we can picture maybe a tree. So a tree has this trunk, right? So the confession is the poisonous tree. Do you see? That's the tree. The confession was coerced. The fruits would be, if he tells them where those bombs are located, they got the locations and identified that, but at the result of or as a consequence of a coerced confession. So those are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You see, those fruits come from this poisonous tree. So that would also be inadmissible in a court of law. But you did very well. Again, fruit of the poisonous tree is probably another legal concept that's kind of hidden, but one can make the argument that that could be a legal implication in this scenario. I'm going to move to the moral aspect and see what you think. There is a concept known as utilitarian. The idea, it is better to sacrifice the one to save the many. In this scenario, could law enforcement say, well, we tortured him because it's better that we sacrifice the one so that we can save the many? So again, the question is, are they morally justified to torture the person if they believe in that concept?
Well, as a law enforcement, you fight every day. You do your work for the right things, to have a lawful world. Involving in this type of activities, illegal activities, it's kind of goes out of your path as a law enforcement.
So say one of your friends takes a different position and says to you, but if torturing that one person can save hundreds, it must be morally justified. How would you rebut his or her observation? What would you say if that person were to say something like that?
It just makes you as bad as a person hurting those people. Okay. So that person's trying to hurt those people and you're doing the same thing. I guess it's understandable, like I said, in order to save those. Just my thing is just you never know if that person, what if that person is not even the right person and mm-hmm. you're torturing someone and or not being reliable. I just can't imagine someone being under that stress and under that pain of being tortured and just wanting it to stop. So to what level are these people going to get that information that might not be reliable?
Could one of the defects of that position statement of someone telling you, if torturing one person can save hundreds, maybe it's morally justified. Could one of those counter arguments to that person be there's a little bit of a defect in that argument because it's going to lead us to a slippery slope. If torture worked here once, what's to prevent torture being used on other things and other people? So maybe there's a protester. Maybe there's a person who disagrees with the way government is, and that person's arrested. And so we allow torture for that suspected terrorist. Let's go ahead and use torture for those people. So do you think that allowing torture once could set the wrong precedence for others?
It could open the door to being used for things that might not be needed.
In this scenario, is the act sort of always wrong? The idea of torture in and of itself is just wrong morally and legally, do you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's both. And I think it's unethical and exhausting, not even for the person being tortured, but for the person that might be doing the torture. I consider when I was reading, it does mention in the scenario how higher individuals. So what says that just someone following the order of torturing this person might not face that trauma, emotional and psychological trauma mm-hmm. that comes from seeing this and having to live this.
And you mentioned this, and I would kind of call it the efficacy of torture. So torture doesn't necessarily equal that this person's going to give you reliable information, right? Could that be an argument to those people who say, but let's torture him, better to sacrifice the one so that many? So what would you say in terms of efficacy or the effect of torture? Does it always result in good evidence?
I don't think so. I think it could result in misleading information or a lie from this person just to make it stop, and in the end might even end up getting away with it because they lied about a location in this case. So he gets that sense of, oh, I did it, even though it was a lie.
Do you think that torturing, if we were to allow torture in this scenario, would that set the wrong precedent? So say, for example, hypothetically, that we allow this officer to torture the person. Is it possible that other countries may see that and now they have an American citizen in their country and that person has committed a crime or allegedly committed a crime? So they say, well, if America can torture him, we're going to torture him too. Do you think it sets the wrong precedence if we were to allow torture in this country?
It does, yes. It just opens the door again to all these type of behaviors, not just from officials from our country, but like you said, outsiders who see this and think it's okay to do so.
Does torture violate human dignity and autonomy, do you think, and why?
Yes. Well, while being in this type of torture, you're being faced with pain or being uncomfortable, and your body kind of at some point kind of gives out. So I think at some point you kind of stop having that autonomy of your body. It just kind of stops working, I want to say, in a way. And I think that's when the torture is, that you just have no more control of yourself.
Sometimes I suggest to students to think about political philosophers and see how they would interpret. So I want to do that with one of them, Immanuel Kant. He was a philosopher, and he said, we must never treat people as mere tools, even villains. Do you think that that statement is sort of applicable here?
Yes, I think it does apply. So from what I'm understanding, is kind of you're treating a person, a person's body, as your tool, in this case, for example, to get something out of it. Even if they did, if they are involved in a criminal or unethical act.
How do you envision torture? What is torture to you? If you had to paint a picture of what torture equals this or torture means this, what does that look like to you?
I think torture is a moment where you're in like duress, like you have no control of what's happening to you or to your body. So I think kind of that control. And maybe, I guess, when we hear the word torture, we think of pain.
So body, we talk about pain, possibly being not dignified, the person is. And so let me share with you, and for the audience, this is Michael Foucault. The book is called Discipline and Punish. And so I'm just going to read a little bit here and ask you if this is an example of torture. And I'm just paraphrasing here, taking just an excerpt. On a scaffold that will be erected there, the flesh will be torn from his breasts, arms, thighs, and calves with red-hot pincers. His right hand holding the knife with which he committed the said parasite, burned with sulfur, and on those places where the flesh will be torn away, poured molten lead, boiling oil, burning resin, wax, and sulfur melted together, and then his body drawn and quartered by four horses, and his limbs and body consumed by fire, reduced to ashes, and his ashes thrown to the winds. Is that an example of torture?
I mean, yes. It's an example of torture leading to someone's death, which can happen. What makes you say that in this process, like, you know where to stop or how much a person can take? But yeah, it's describing inflicting pain into a person's body.
And so again, in the scenario, it mentions they have no other choice. And so the official, the high-level official, suggests torture. It's sort of written ambiguously. And so again, torture can be something that extreme, which is what I read. But what you just shared, it's that, you know, taking a human body, a human person, and doing bad things, causing pain to that person, and so on. There is a question at the very bottom that, again, so they're trying to extract some information from this suspected terrorist who's invoked his fifth, his sixth, and he's not talking. So they think, well, let's torture the wife. How do you feel about that point? Would it be correct? Is it legally, morally justified to torture the wife?
No, I think that even goes too far. It goes I think it's even worse. If at some point I could understand why they would do this to the criminally accused, I don't understand how this person has anything to do in this case. She might not even have any knowledge of what's going on, and it's just not right.
The scenario says she's an innocent. Is there ever any time that torturing an innocent woman, his wife, can be morally and legally justified so as to torture her so that he later comes back and says, okay, I'll tell you where the bombs are placed? Do you think that that would be ever justified, morally or legally?
I don't think it could be morally or legally justified.
So we began this scenario, and I said that I was not going to ask you for your decision until now. So we've gone all over the scenario by way of legal and moral implications. When you read it, when you analyzed it, when you critically thought about it and looked at the circumstances, looked at the pros and the cons and so on and so forth, and injected maybe philosophers or your own values in this scenario, what is your decision? Would you torture that suspect?
I would not. I would not torture this person based on both legal standing and morally. Okay. I just don't think it's right, or I don't think it's effective.
So you would not torture the suspected terrorist. The question is the wife. Are you of the same belief there too? Would you torture the wife to have him confess?
I would not.
Also,
I don't think the wife has anything.
Of those two, which one is more morally unjustified and legally unjustified, to torture the suspected terrorist or the wife? Which one is worse to do?
The wife. I would say the wife is definitely worse. I don't think, like I said, she has much to do or even knowledge in this case. And it's unreliable. It's just she doesn't have any information that could be of use.
So you're okay with the idea in your mind, morally, legally, your conscience is clear to say, while some may argue, better to sacrifice the one to save the many. For you, it's not even justified to do that. You would have in your heart, I suspect, in your mind to say, yeah, but it's immoral, it's illegal to do that. Is that correct, do you think?
Yes, I do believe there's other alternatives.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So what would you do if you are that officer, that supervisor? You know it's illegal to torture, okay? You don't call upon your employee, the police officer, to torture that person. So you think about alternatives. So what are some alternatives that the law enforcement officer could have done to get this guy to tell us where the bombs are?
Well, one that comes to mind would be some type of deal. I know that's like allowed in certain cases where you agree to take out some type of like crime, a lesser crime.
Okay.
Out of that trial or out of that sentencing or charge.
In other words, don't go with the high crime of terrorist and, you know, a bomber or whatever, but rather reduce the charge, right? To get him to tell us where they are. We'll reduce the charge or we won't go after you if you tell us and so on. Any other alternatives that you can think of?
Well, even in the case how it mentions, I wouldn't torture the wife, but maybe you could bring her in for questioning if she's up for it and maybe she'll have some information. You never know.
But question her, not torture her, right?
Yes, correct.
But time is ticking, you know? It would have to be maybe an extraction of information from him, from her, very quickly. And say you don't have that much time. So how do you extract the information either from the wife or from him when you know the clock is ticking and these bombs may go off? What could you offer? What could you suggest?
I think the only thing I can think of is just that I think a deal comes to mind. It can be done quickly and approved quickly.
But anything short of torture, correct?
Correct.
So we live in a society where there are multiple cameras everywhere. People have phones. Most people, if not all people, have phones. And so maybe there's a call by law enforcement to look at security cameras. And maybe they find the person walking, the one they have apprehended, being interrogated, and they follow him. So could cameras be an alternative? In other words, everybody, all hands on deck. Let's see where this guy was. Open all the cameras and maybe follow his footsteps. Could that be something?
Yeah, that could be an alternative. It could work, yes. And then it could be effective as in finding out where he was or where he spent most time and then maybe trying to evacuate that place and get law enforcement to handle.
So in some places, and I suspect, and it doesn't tell us where this took place, but let's just say New York City. Do law enforcement agencies, in your estimation, do they work together pretty closely? In other words, they have New York Police Department, they have FBI, they have Customs, they have all these agencies working together. Do you think that could be an alternative? In other words, bring up a task force, a command center, to have all these agencies go in and talk and address this matter? Would that be an answer?
Yeah.
An alternative?
Yes. Usually these type of
agencies do talk to each other and they do help each other, and especially in like high level crimes like this or where a lot of people are at risk.
This is my own assessment. I'm not going to be biased on this, but this is my last question for you. So in some dilemmas, sometimes, again, when you look at moral and legal, sometimes one outweighs the other one. In other words, sometimes, okay, well, yeah, morally he was justified to do this, but it's illegal or whatever. In this case, though, are they pretty much even? In other words, it's morally unjustified to torture. It's legally unjustified to torture. Did you sort of come to that conclusion, or did one outweigh the other?
I think they're kind of both go hand in hand. Like I said, it's just not legal and it's not justified. It's not legal. It won't be, again, admissible. So what happens after, even if he does get that confession out, what happens to that confession? Like, yeah. What happens to this person? Are they going to be like charged and actually responsible for their acts? And then on the side of the morally, I just don't think it's right, and it's, like I said, not reliable either. So I might be torturing a person that's completely innocent, and I just don't believe in that.
And torturing a person doesn't necessarily equate good information.
Correct.
Because he or she is going to say anything just to stop the torture, stop the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I wondered if you shared that with any of your friends or family.
I usually do it with my friend.
Would that person torture the person?
She had like some mixed feelings about it. She was like, well, but I'm saving a lot of people. It's just one person. So she did see that. And like I said, I think it's understandable.
Yeah.
But not justified.